Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
September 30, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying, and I'm a little too loud. Anyway, it is Friars Day, Friday night, so that means we're doing the open lines, the open mic, and that means you, listening right now, if you're hearing us live, just after 8 p.m. Eastern, about 2 minutes after 8 p.m. Eastern time, here in what we used to call the United States, you can call in at 319-527-5016, 319-527-5016. That's the number to call in and participate. My co-host BP is with me, and like I said, you can be with me too. There's one other way, by the by. You can join us via Skype if you message me, Charles.Ocelli on Skype. Ask me to call you into the show, and I will call you into the show. Okay. So there is all that. Got it out of the way as quick as I could. BP, how you doing tonight, man?
Oh, pretty good. Sitting here just rode out the hurricane as it blew by today.
Oh, yeah, it went by you today, didn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess it got out of here. Well, it finally cleared up about 5:30 is when the rain blew through. So we're enjoying a very shortened storm event. We thought it was going to be a little worse than this.
Well, fair enough. I had Captain Trips on the show last night, and he was, you know, living in Florida now, was supposed to get the brunt of the storm, right, and did not. So, you know, is what it is. But they all week were telling us how we were all going to get pounded by hurricanes and everything else. And it was supposed to rip up this way into Georgia, too. And never did. So, you know.
Yeah, I think it surprised a lot of people when it cut all the way across Florida, hit the ocean, regained strength, and then came back in South Carolina. I don't think they originally were thinking that.
No, not at all. European and U.S. models both did not have it clocked right. So anyway, I was doing a bit of work just before airtime. I got out a few of the podcasts and all that kind of stuff. But, of course, I've been on a bit of a reduced schedule recently. So I know some people have noticed. You know, but not everybody has. It is what it is. Little reduction in my schedule. Maybe I'll talk about that later. And we might have a change in the live schedule coming up very soon. Might have more stuff going on Sundays. And maybe less going on during other parts of the week. We'll get into that later. I do want to tell everybody that, as I said last night, and I'm going to get to it at the beginning of the show instead of the end, you know, donations are helpful at this time. And anybody who is donating, if you send me an address, okay, especially right now and for the next foreseeable bit of the future, I've got these new stickers with the that are reminiscent of the Godfather logo and all that, the Ocelli.com syndicate stickers. Send you a handful of them if you send me any kind of donation. How's that sound if I get an address? Especially over the course of, well, let's see. Maybe I'll go for all of October. I probably got enough stickers, and given the fact that, well, there's been cancellations and stuff like that in memberships and all that good stuff as of late, got a feeling I've got plenty of stickers, so I'll send you a handful of them. Anywhere you are, doesn't matter. I'm already going to have to mail some to Australia, and I've mailed some to Switzerland, and I don't care. It's fine. Wherever you are, I'll get the stamps. Obviously, your donations will go toward the stamps because broke is broke. And I'd like to be able to pay some bills. And I've got a few. So just saying, you guys help out. I will send you that stuff. And maybe I'll send some other things along in a flat envelope for you. So there. I got that out of the way at the beginning of the show. So we won't have to do it at the end of the show tonight. And we still got eight. Little under 2 hours to get into anything you want to talk about out there. So, let me turn it over to you quickly too, BP, because you might have stuff on your mind from this particular week. I know later we'll probably see, start looking around and seeing if we can find any naked news updates and such. I just realized my door is still open too. It's very quiet in my house at the moment. So, I forgot to shut my door. I'm gonna go shut my door. Okay. And, yeah, you just go ahead and, get us started on anything you want to get us started on, and we'll, hell, if nobody calls in, I'll be fine this week. I'll just talk to you.
There you go. I think we can handle it.
Absolutely.
It's been an interesting week here. You know, of course, we've all been under threat of hurricane now for about 4 days, but, luckily things were not as bad as they predicted, and, it came ashore again this afternoon about 2 o'clock down in South Carolina, and as soon as it hit the state, came in when it started falling apart. So thank God for that. But, we got some much needed rain. Yeah, a little more than much needed. It's been kind of a drought here for the past few weeks. So I think we're in good enough shape to handle what came through. You know, our thoughts and prayers go out to those people in Florida that, basically just went through complete devastation. They took it pretty hard when it came in right about Sanibel Island and completely wiped it out. Other communities on the mainland, were hit pretty hard. And as it went across the state, did a quite extensive amount of damage. Of course, anywhere in Florida that storm like that hit's going to do some damage because it's so heavily populated. But, you know, some people say, well, if you move to the coast, you take what happens. We're kind of used to it, yeah. In this state. We've seen several major hurricanes come through here over the years. So, you know, people want to be able to live near the ocean. It's understandable. But when you look at the amount of devastation down in Florida, you wonder, you know, was it really worth it to build that nice, that close, that expensively?
Yeah,
and
well,
it can all be wiped out.
The narrow land strip that, you know, is Florida's geography is also part of the problem, right? And, cause, you know, there's a bit of shoreline exposed for many states up and down the East Coast, and they always have to face some sort of, you know, threat from the hurricane season is what it is. But, when I lived in Jersey, which is a very small state as well, it just seemed a lot worse. I don't know. You know, honestly, the devastating hurricanes were much worse up there all the time because it was a tiny state, you know, and a lot of infrastructure built along the shoreline. It's weird. Living in middle Georgia, I don't really get that much of an effect from that stuff. We get tornadoes occasionally and some flooding. But Florida gets all that. So, you know, and then alligators wind up being relocated because they go floating along to somewhere else. Stuff like that always happens during these storms. And, you know, honestly, some of Florida was hit for sure. And took, you know, a little bit of a thrashing, but not as bad as they said it was going to be. You know, it was like a storm of a lifetime kind of thing. Of course, Puerto Rico took another shot. Parts of Cuba took another shot, you know, from, not just this storm, but another one. And, still given the, first government corruption, then, private corporate corruption, you know, Puerto Rico's still a mess from Hurricane Maria, which is what, 2 years ago now? You know, I mean,
yeah.
2-3 years, yeah. Trump was in office still. You know, remember the famous thing of him throwing paper towels? Well,
oh, yeah.
You know, nobody's been able to straighten that out. And like I said, government corruption couldn't get anything done. And then they had a private company come in to try and take care of the electrical problems there. And now they've done virtually nothing as well. And everybody's collecting money and nobody's helping people. So, you know, I know who cares about Puerto Rico, but it is part of this country. So, you know, sort it out, man. People should not be living like that. And I don't care who's stealing the money. And at least if they're going to steal, let them get something done. You know, it's one thing if they're going to steal the money and accomplish the goal. It's another thing if they just rob you and give you nothing in return. So,
there was a push on, this year for, granting Puerto Rico statehood. You know, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, they've already got the right to vote, they're paying taxes, so I'm surprised they haven't followed through on it, but a lot of Democrats were pushing to go ahead and make them the 51st state.
Yeah.
And, you know, that very well may happen in the next few years, you never know.
Well, when you and I were both still in, you know, school, you know, slightly different classes and all, but still, we were both still in school, they were talking about it back then, too. You know, why not grant Puerto Rico? And there was another place, too. I can't remember if it was the Philippines or it was something else.
Like
another
Guam or somewhere, one of our protectorates.
Yeah, one of our, you know, territories one way or another. And I don't even know the technicalities behind all of that. But I remember saying to myself, well, they have almost everything except they don't get represented as a state, right? It kind of seemed crappy because they were paying for it. And
oh, well, D.C. itself is another talk of another state. You know, go ahead and give D.C. their statehood.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessary, but I mean, an entire island that, you know, does pay taxes, does participate in the system, is a tourist attraction, not just for Americans, but others. I don't know. It just seems like a useful asset that would be good to fold into the entirety of the fold. But I don't know. I don't know what to say. And then there's others that, oh, we don't need any more. And okay, fine. But you've already got like half the process going, you know. I mean, I know they also use Puerto Rico for, like, you know, bombing and testing grounds and stuff.
We get a lot of our Major League Baseball players from there as well.
Well, it makes more sense because year-round you got warm weather and, you know, and all that. So, okay. And they used to, I don't know if they still do this even, used to be whole, like, leagues during the winter of baseball that occurred just in Puerto Rico, right? Like
winter leagues that take place in Mexico, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic.
Mm. Well, see, but again,
got a lot of Dominican players as well.
Yeah, well, but again, because of the friendly relationship with the United States, you'd figure that Puerto Rico, that would be another way of bringing them into the fold. Why not, you know, completely integrated into the country, considering it's I don't know. What do I know? At this point, I mean, do we need more? I don't know, but it's just one of those things. And people do push from time to time to add them. And then it just seems to go away, right? Like it's a political talking point for a minute and then it's gone, you know?
Yeah, you usually hear about it, you know, on an election year, about midway through the year, you know, you start hearing about it at the beginning of summertime. It's an idea that's thrown around because I've heard it every election now coming up. You know, well, what about Puerto Rico? You know, should we go ahead and grant them, you know, full statehood? And I don't know. I don't know if we should or not. I mean, kind of like 50, but then again, you know, maybe we should start selling membership to the United States.
Well, you know, there's another thing, right, is if another foreign nation wanted to become part of the U.S., perhaps that could strengthen the economy, diversify certain, you know, I don't know. I just don't know. It's a weird debate point that I never really got deeply involved in. But considering that you got a lot of people from Puerto Rico who have come to the mainland, it probably is an interesting thing to kick around politically because maybe you get some of those guys on your side if the sentiment is with granting them statehood, right? I don't know. Maybe. I just don't know what to make of it. Anyhow, I don't know why we got into that. Oh, I know why, because of the hurricane. But that's a true thing, though, that they you know, they still have people that have tarps on their houses instead of roofs from Maria. And then the electrical grid's a mess still, you know, plenty of people without power or with inconsistent power, et cetera, which probably challenges water filtration in certain areas still. I mean, that should not be going on, you know, for years, but it is, and doesn't matter who changes or, you know, like I said, they took some stuff out of the hands of the government who apparently couldn't get things done. I mean, you know, is it just the government's problem? Apparently not, because, like I said, a private company has now come in and, you know, done nothing also. So it's just, All right. Well, anyway, there's, I'm sure, much more to talk about, and you guys could join us again, 319-527-5016. Anything else on your mind besides the weather, BP? Anything that caught your eye in the news this week? I mean, we could discuss the escalations or alleged escalations with Russia. We could talk about, geez, somebody just died. Who was it that just died? There was a rapper, I think, that just died.
Coolio. Coolio just died.
Yeah.
He's, 59?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, 59.
That. Yeah, something like, I know he was only like, you know, not a full generation older than me. If people don't remember Coolio, I think his biggest hit was probably, Gangster's Paradise, which was that song that was, featured in that movie. Oh my God, what was the name of that movie? It had the, you know, the white lady goes to the ghetto to teach.
Michelle Pfeiffer. What was it? Criminal Minds, I think, something like that.
Dangerous Minds, or was
Dangerous Minds?
Yeah, okay, something like that. She's a high school teacher, and you know, goes to the ghetto and deals with that, and teaches the kids or whatever, right? And Coolio also, again, if you need a snap picture in your head, he was the guy who had the braids sticking out of the sides of his head, I think, at the time, right?
Oh yes,
yeah,
sticking out all over, kind of, sort of.
Right, right. I just sort of, you know, like Pippi Longstocking, but with dreads. Remember Pippi Longstocking with the pigtails sticking out of the sides of her head on TV?
Oh, yeah.
In the 70s, I think that was. Anyway. No, but, I mean, that happened. Of course, there's a conspiracy theory about that. Supposedly, there's a conspiracy theory about Anne Heche and her death, which happened a few weeks back, right? When she finally succumbed to the injuries from the car accident.
I did not realize there was a conspiracy theory involved on that one. I thought she was drunk and ran into a house.
Yeah, well, that, but then there's people saying that she was just about to drop a documentary that she funded on child trafficking, you know? And that you know, people didn't want it to come out, so somebody offed her to make sure that it wouldn't happen. I
had not heard that one.
Yeah, I'm just telling you the theory. I'm not telling you I agree with it. It's out there.
That's interesting. I didn't realize she was working on a documentary. That's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah, supposedly that's what's happening. So, let's see. Roberto Clemente gets a mention in the chat room. Yeah, of course, Roberto Clemente. For some years, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was a Mets fan, and for some years, pretty much the whole team was from Puerto Rico at one point. I mean, it was like everybody. They were speaking Spanish on the field. I remember watching that going, that's interesting, you know? Because it used to be quite an ethnically diverse team, the Mets, and then just seemed like, I don't know, at one point, just everybody was Puerto Rican except, like, I think David Wright, you know, on the Mets. Maybe Mike Piazza was still with them back then. I don't know. Anyways, but Roberto Clemente, many great baseball players coming from Puerto Rico, Cuba, a lot of the Latino countries, or, you know, we used to say Hispanic. I don't think that's politically correct anymore. Anyhow,
well, it's not like us to not be politically correct.
Well, you know, I'm just acknowledging that there is a political correctness, but I really don't really give a crap about it. So it is what it is.
There you go.
Anyway, yeah. So what else is happening in the news? I
really haven't paid much attention to the news this week. I mean, we've been busy prepping everything on the job site for this hurricane coming through. And now that it's through, I get to go in tomorrow and check and see if we got any damage. But other than that, I mean, really, I've not even had a chance to sit down in front of the TV in a week.
Well, then I guess you missed Joe Biden searching around to thank a dead politician during a speech. this politician, I want to thank this person for putting things together. And I think she died 2 years ago. No.
She died. It was just a month or so ago.
Oh, it was a month ago.
She was the one. Yeah, she was involved in the car wreck.
Oh, right.
Where
right.
Apparently her staffer's car went over the center line. They hit another car head on. But yeah, I did hear about that. He was he's giving the speech and he said, is Jackie here? And he's looking around a room and not realizing she's deceased.
Yeah, well, you would have thought that the people handling him would have been smart enough to strike that name from his notes, but I don't know, maybe it was off script.
I don't know how that would happen. You know, you got to kind of wonder exactly who is his handlers and exactly what strings they're pulling. Because, you know, Comrade Joe's clearly out of it.
Fair enough, but... Oh, and then there's been some weirdness apparently regarding China, but not much news coverage on it because everybody's obsessed with, you know, whether Putin's actually saber-rattling regarding the nuclear thing or not. You know, what's actually happening in Ukraine? Russians allegedly fleeing from the Russian Federation, which I question overall if that's even real, did last night. I just put out that podcast from last night with Mike. where we talked again, and I'm probably going to get a whole heap of crap again about my sort of open-ended analysis on what Russia is going to do. No, I can't clock it. I admit that I don't know, and I don't think it's very predictable about certain things. You had the pipeline, the Nord Stream pipeline was, there was an explosion there, and that is an ongoing circumstance that's going to, you know, be discussed. Who blew it up? Who did it?
Yeah, I saw one story that claimed that a Russian sub and a it wasn't a battleship. I don't know what class theirs. Anyway, a Russian ship and sub were both seen in the area immediately after this thing happened. So, you know, the speculation is, was it sabotaged? And if it was sabotaged, who could have done it? You know, of course, Putin's already come out and said, you know, the West did it. You know, the United States was responsible for it. So,
well,
is it worth taking the blame?
Well, see, but here's the thing. Regardless of who did it, I think that, you know, look, we have to defend ourselves, as Russia is going to be the main theme here no matter what. And it's, you know, just like this whole thing with the referendums, which were covered extensively in the mainstream media for a couple of days, you know, about do these provinces, these areas, these, you know, supposedly Russian-loyal parts of Ukraine, do they want to become part of Russia? And they have referendums that, you know, obviously are going to go Russia's way, whether they do or don't. And so that's happening. And then he's going to declare, okay, this is part of Russia. Now we have to defend it legally. But will there be legal recognition of that? And meanwhile, hey, look, Europeans, you want to complain about your energy problem? Well, you know, NATO and the U.S. bombed our pipeline probably. So, you know, they're the ones that are causing you the headaches with your energy, not us, right? So I think that's the posture, regardless of what the reality is. And could they possibly have bombed their own asset, which, you know, a lot of people are going, that sounds crazy because they would lose money and they would lose this and that. But I've seen crazier things happen. So,
well, both Nord Stream pipelines were both shut down. So, you know, that's one of the things that's going on right now. They've hit them with so many sanctions. That's like, Russia is responsible for, what was it? 20% of the nitrogen based fertilizers that are used worldwide. And, you know, that's one of the problems that we've got now that's affecting everywhere is, being able to get nitrogen based fertilizers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the question is, you know, would they do something like that to themselves? Well, conveniently, both of those lines were shut down when they were sabotaged. So they've only suffered so much of a loss. The problem would be fixing them and being able to then, you know, move material through that pipeline back into Russia or back into Europe this winter. So, you know, they're already predicting a harsh winter for Europe. They're saying that the costs involved with energy right now, that the average European's looking at, you know, $3,000 to $6,000 just to heat their home this winter, mm-hmm. which is a third, you know, in a lot of places they say it's up to a third of the average income to be able to heat your house. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this winter. You know, is anybody going to be able to step up and fill the gap in providing the energy needs to Europe, which are quite high?
Right, and the other thing is, of course, with the UK being Brexited and all that, is King Charles going to have a solution for his subjects, right? I don't know, and that's another thing, because in the news this week was also the Bank of England, you know, making some moves, right, to try and deal with their horrendous inflation and all that. And what's going on there, I got to tell you, it's another point of confusion, but interesting, you know, King Charles will now be dealing with that along with a new prime minister.
Yeah, what is it? The Bank of England is trying to, they're trying to fight the high inflation, and their response is to provide a bunch of massive tax cuts and borrow the money to cover the cost of the tax cuts. You know, they'll have, we'll just have to wait and see if it has any effect on it here. You know, they're over there, they're trying to cut down on the high inflation rate as well. and the high interest rate. So they're talking about tax cuts to put more money back into the economy, and they think that's going to bring it down.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the opposite of what we're doing here, where they're just jacking up interest rates, and you know, they're not necessarily worried about a tax cut. And if the Democrats get their way, the taxes are going up with these bills that they're passing. So
yeah, well,
it's interesting. Two countries using, you know, completely different methods to battle the same problem. We'll see which one works out.
Well, that's another interesting thing because, you know, we're about to hit that pivotal midterm. And I mean, it's almost October, BP. So you're talking less than 40 days from now, right? We've got the midterm election, which is this big swing that everybody was talking about. Have you noticed that people have sort of backed off of that discussion now? Like, it's not even something to really watch. I mean, I'm sure the intensity will pick up in the weeks just before it. But I don't know, outside of the fact that, I mean, I'm getting pounded with, I mean, I don't know what it's like where you are as far as the political commercials and stuff, but anything you turn on, whether it's YouTube or a streaming service, because even if I do have access to a streaming service, I'm not paying the premium one that's commercial free, you know? So I get the commercials, and even when I want to watch Beavis and Butthead, I'm getting Raphael Warnock pro and con commercials, right? Here in Georgia.
It's been up this year, but it's not been as bad as it has been in the past. I know the last election, of course, it was presidential election, so you had those ads as well. But here I've seen relative, well, compared to years past, I would say this year I've noticed less in the way of political ads on the TV here. And it's, we've got, what, two senators up for election and one, Tom Tillis, I think his seat, is going up. He's stepping down. So you've got one Senate seat and a bunch of House seats, and really it's not been that bad. I really have been surprised, on the lack of advertisements in this area. And maybe it's because we don't have that many up for election this year. Now, I know the costs are up. The money being spent is up over the past election, but that seems to increase every election.
Well, so see,
it's amazing, this obscene amounts of money that they pour into advertising. And
They spend 50 million dollars to win a seat that, you know, you can only allegedly earn $100,000 from, right? I mean, this is the kind of thing that goes on.
What is it, $178,000 now is for most members of the House, I think they're making a year, and it's
something like,
you know, it's a lot of money that they dump into it. I'm just, you know, I'm one of those that sits back like a lot of other people and speculates, you know, what could we do if we just spent that money on some of these problems that we're dealing with instead of dumping it into TV and radio and print advertising?
Yeah,
you know,
wouldn't
the flyers,
that be interesting? Yeah.
Two or three flyers in the mailbox every day. It's like these guys are generating more trash than anything else. Most people, when they go to the polls, they've got their minds made up when they go in there. So I really wonder how effective is this, a lot of this advertising that they're doing.
Well, it's a weird thing because between the GOP's money coming into this state and all of the DNC money that's supposedly getting behind Abrams, I'm only seeing a few of the, like, a couple of commercials from Abrams about, you know, abortion bans, really. That's about it. And you know what the thing that got me screaming at a screen, though, a couple of days ago was? I bet you won't be able to guess what it was. The commercial, the long commercial, by the way, because some of them now running like 3, 4, 5 minutes long. And it was not a typical political ad, but it got me actually yelling at a screen. Can you take a wild guess at who produced it or what it was about?
There would be no telling.
Okay, so, because you're thinking, what would piss Chuck off to the point where he's actually yelling at a screen? All right, here it is. Georgia Power had a commercial in the run-up to this, you know, hurricane that didn't really roll through, right? And their commercial was, we're Georgia Power, we're prepared, we have standby teams, we have, you know, moved a bunch of resources around, we're ready to go in case there's any problems with your power grid, and they're running a commercial for it across various platforms. So you get locally identified, say on YouTube or, you know, like again, one of the streaming services or whatever, it figures out your location and it might feed you a 4-minute Georgia Power commercial. So now you're wondering, why would you yell at that? Well, because they have jacked up rates to such a degree, I'm saying to myself, instead of spending money on these commercials, jerks, how about you reduce the rate that you're raping us for the power cost? You know? I mean, it's just me, right, BP? I mean, I'm just crazy, right?
No, I would understand that. I mean, that would be like Duke Power here doing the same thing. You know, we're ready for this. And we've seen those ads. We've got, you know, 4,500 crews lined up, ready to go once things, you know, clear out. So, yeah, the only reason they want to get it fixed is because that's lost revenue, you know, if you think about it.
Well, yeah, but the fact that they have a commercial to assure you, don't worry, Georgia Power is ready for you. I don't need them spending money to run that on Paramount Plus and Comedy Central's website and YouTube and everything. I mean, that costs money. Plus, they just filmed it, okay, and just had it edited together because it had fresh material in it and graphics and everything else, a rush job to deal with just this particular hurricane. This wasn't like a general.
Well, that's another thing that kills me is when you see like NPR, you know, they advertise who supports them. And you're sitting here watching them thinking, thanks to Duke Power, who's responsible for it. It's like, yeah, you know, Duke, if you cut down on the amount of money you're giving NPR or PBS every year, you might could lower our rates a little bit. I mean, is that money you really needed if you're just turning right around and benefiting National Public Radio over it? You know, cut my rate. Yeah. I think they can fend for themselves. They've been around long enough.
Well, instead of giving Ken Burns another $5-6 million for another snooze fest, how about, you know?
Yeah. How about cutting my electrical bill?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just me again.
I don't know. Do you guys have a utility commission there that oversees things like we do here in this state?
You know, like sort of, but it doesn't do anything. That's the weird, like, I went to try and figure that out, actually, to see if there was somebody I could complain to, you know, about this. Like, is there a regulatory agency that, and you go to try and interface with it. And by the way, the interface doesn't work. Like, you know, they have a thing like contact us. You click the page and it goes nowhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what I got out of that. That's why I didn't even commit to memory what it's actually called. Somebody could look it up if they want. But go ahead, click on it. Try to contact that Georgia entity. The gateway doesn't work or whatever. You know, so just saying.
Yeah, here we have a utility commission that anytime that, you know, Duke wants a pay raise, you know, they basically have to run it before the utility commission and they'll agree, you know, as to whether they can increase their rates or not. And I hadn't heard anything here, I'd say the last year and a half, but seems to me my bill keeps going up for what they're charging. Mm. You know, a lot of people don't realize that these power plants are either here. We have a lot of hydroelectrical power, but right, we still have some coal fired plants. I think we're down to one now with Duke. Well, and they've got natural gas fired plants. So, yeah.
Hey,
of course,
I just,
natural gas is going up.
Yeah. I just realized something. We're actually past the time that I wanted to take a break here, for the first segment. And we do have a caller as well. So you know what I'm going to do is hold the caller over. We're going to take a break, and maybe I'll discuss the idiotic, you know, it's not just Raphael Warnock good and bad commercials, but Herschel Walker's a liar and put a gun to his wife's head and all this other stuff. They're running those ad nauseum. Okay. But outside of that, yeah, I got Georgia Power and Herschel Walker. That's the ads they're, like, you know, running on everything, whether it's broadcast radio, which still exists here in Georgia, and whether it's that or any local TV, if it's one of your platforms, you get identified locally, they run that, and that's what you're getting universally in the state of Georgia. Herschel Walker putting a gun to his ex-wife's head, and Raphael Warnock is a scumbag who you know, liberally spends money on stuff that doesn't help people in Georgia. And meanwhile, Governor Kemp kept his word and issued debit cards to anybody who's on any sort of welfare program to give them a refund, sort of, you know, just before election time, on the surplus here in the state of Georgia. which if you take a look at the condition of the services and many things here, of course, if you don't spend money, you might end up with a surplus because you're not actually doing anything. And, yeah, that's the way that's working. But who knows? Maybe we'll get into some other discussions, and we'll hear from callers, 319-527-5016. That's the number to call. B. Pete is with me, and you can join me as well. You can also reach out to me, charles.ocelli on Skype, and I can call you into the show if you ask me to. But otherwise, you can call in 319-527-5016. We got one caller in the bullpen, and who knows who else might warm up while we go to break. Stick around. The Ocelli Effect will return after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Support Chuck Ocelli and Chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And, you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model, too. And, look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly.
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this, too, because, you know, the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapon. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination spoken to her claim?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Thank you. Yes. ChuckoChili.com.
Coming in for the second segment of the Ocelli Effect tonight here on a Friday. So if you're hearing us live just after, let's see, 8:48 p.m. Eastern on Friday, the 30th of September, 2022, allegedly, guess what? We're live, and you can call in 319-527-5016, 319-527-5016. And reach out to me, charles.ocelli on Skype. I can call you into the show if you like, but you got to ask me, and I'll do it. And if you're not on my list, no problem. Just send a request. Not like I keep everybody that makes a request, but I will add you during the show, even if necessary. So, B. Pete, my co-host, is with me, and we do have a caller on the line. And I do want to get to him, B. Pete, because we kept him holding through a fairly long break there, and we're only going to take one more tonight. Before the Age of Transitions begins at 10 p.m. Eastern. So do you want to get to the caller, B. Pete? What do you say?
Oh, absolutely. Bring him in.
All right. Well, I do believe we have the one and only Jimmy James, who I have a wager with regarding the political campaign that is about to commence and finish in a little more than a month. Here in Georgia. But other than that, what's on your mind, Jimmy James? How you doing?
Doing good here.
Cool.
So, in Georgia, did they ever fix anything election law-wise? They didn't change anything from 2020, right?
No, they passed a whole bunch of stuff happened since 2020. Yeah, there were changes to the polling places, some of the regulations regarding mail-in balloting that happened during 2020. Frankly, nobody has been making any sort of statements about it, but there are changes in the procedures. So I'm sure we're going to hear about it election day or the week leading up to elections when people try to vote early. That's when we're going to hear about it, but nobody's really made any fuss about it with, like I say, just a little over a month ago.
Because I knew it was either Georgia or Pennsylvania. One of the two never fixed anything, so it's going to be a big mess again.
Well, I'm thinking Pennsylvania. I mean, they made adjustments here. I'm not saying that they fixed it. I'm saying that they made adjustments. I don't know if it's going to be better, worse, if somebody's going to cry foul. I'm not sure. But the governor seems to be pleased with what he's got in place. So that's all I know. And Abrams is also not complaining yet. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll give her time. It sure looks like she's going to lose now. I think I made a bad bet.
But brother, I tried to tell you. I tried to tell you. You know, what can I say? I mean, I was worried I might have to
Gambler's
save up.
Remorse.
I was worried I might have to save up $50 for you, but with the information and the polling I'm seeing this week, I am not concerned about saving it up for you, bro. Because yeah, you're not winning that bet.
Well, it sure don't look like it now. What's going on? 2 weeks ago, it was all the exact opposite. Those stupid fake polls.
I told you
well,
that
you
was.
You got 40 days to go. We could flip back the other way.
Listen, as I said, if she wins, then it is a stolen election, and I will absolutely go all in on any theory anybody's got about it. Let's examine it. It's stolen. That's it. And you might hear from Addy Ads about that on this show. If any chicanery really does occur, if anything bizarre happens, if any skullduggery occurs, my friends, I assure you, Addy Ads will be all over it because he's, clearly, with the pro-Trump and pro-Kemp teams here in Georgia. So he will be all over it.
And, you know, it's a bad sign here in this state. They've already started complaining that they can't find enough poll workers, that people were so disgusted after the last election. They've just totally removed themselves from the system.
Mm. Jimmy James, if you can mute when you're not talking because you're feeding back a bit when we're talking. That would be good. Okay, yeah, they're already dejected and demoralized in North Carolina. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, the last election was so tough that, you know, a lot of people dealt with – it's tough working a polling place. I mean, because you're on the go all day unless you're in one of these rural areas where 20 people come and cast their vote and you can pretty much set your watch to what time they're going to come in. They're, you know, so regular. But we're having a hard time finding poll workers. They've been advertised – most of the counties around here have been advertising that, yeah, they need help, need people to volunteer.
Yeah, there's no shortage of poll workers in Georgia. As I've stated before, they have this weird system where the supervisory team is made up of one GOP, you know, like dedicated person, one Democrat dedicated person, and two independents, and sometimes one independent, and they must all concur for there to be a problem or a solution regarding anything that's contended here, which is very weird and slows down the process. But, I mean, objectively, I try and look at it and say, well, it actually looks kind of fair. If you can get, you know, a Trump supporter, a Biden supporter, and somebody like me who goes, I hate you both, to agree, you probably got a reasonable solution. You know what I mean? But they have no shortage. They have no problems here. So far, at least not reported. Again, I have not seen complaints yet about the polling. Nobody's preemptively even saying, hey, somebody's stealing. Somebody's trying to stuff ballot boxes. Dead people are voting. None of that. None of that is being said in Georgia yet. Again, you know, like you said, 40 days to go. So who knows? But, you know, and I'm sure somebody's going to cry that they lost and they didn't lose fairly one way or the other. And that'll probably be Stacey Abrams on the governor's side. But I don't know if there's going to be more of that from all sides. Who knows? You know, but generally speaking, it'll have to be Democrats in Georgia because they don't win in Georgia, except in Atlanta and Savannah. And apparently where I live, they win more often than not. But they don't have a lock on Macon Bibb County. They just generally come out on top. You know, when you factor it all in, it's generally a blue area, but it's not like so dominated that there's no point in even voting if you're on the red side. Generally speaking, you're outnumbered, but not completely, not overwhelmingly. So, anyway. Yeah, so far, no big deal about the poll workers here, but in North Carolina, they're so pissed off about the last one that they're like having trouble getting volunteers, huh?
Yeah, they're washing their hands of it, apparently.
What are you gonna do? That'll happen, you know? That will happen. So, Jimmy James, did you have a topic you wanted to throw on the table or anything here? Because, of course, as the newest and only caller so far, it is your right to throw whatever you want out there. I know you didn't want to just talk about you made a bad bet with Stacey Abrams. Because, look, we still don't know for sure. I mean, it could very well be that you actually are the whisperer here and you knew better than me because there's still 40 days left, right? And a lot of things can happen in 40 days and 40 nights.
That's so true.
Yeah. So anyway, anything else on your mind, sir? Jimmy James, he might be talking to his mute button at the moment. I'm sorry about that if you are. It was just that you were feeding, like we were feeding back as we were talking, so I'm sorry about that. But yeah, if you could maybe unmute and let us know if you got something else on your mind.
He's digging through the couch cushions trying to get up his $50.
Well, that could be too. Anyway. One more time, I will mention that, yeah, I do have the, Ocelli.com syndicate stickers that I'll be sending out along with, some other little goodies in an envelope if, anybody makes a donation, especially let's go from now until Election Day. How about that? With that offer for sure, and I'm positive I have enough stickers to send you guys handfuls of these without an issue. So there's that. I did post the podcast from yesterday, so the Jack Blood Show is up. It's also in the stream rotation now, but I only got that done today. There was a whole bunch of crap I had to get through in order to get my website functional again. You guys didn't get to see any of that on the front end, but there was all these problems with stuff that didn't work on the back end, so I had to fix all that before I could post. Took care of that, though, and ran it through. What else is going on? Patreon is now clamping down on people for taxes, because, you know, magically I've actually made enough money that now they want to make sure that I've got all my proper tax forms done.
Oh Lord, are you serious?
Yeah, and I mean, the threshold for that is if you make if you appear as though you might make $600 over the course of a year, on Patreon. Okay, so if you make $50 a month on Patreon, they want you to fill out a W-9 and a and you'll be issued a 1099 and all that. Yeah. So they were hassling me about that because, you know, I apparently made, finally, have gotten to the threshold where it looks like I'll make $50 a month on Patreon. So, anyway, that's gross, by the way. That's not what I get to keep, even. Just so you know. So ridiculous. Let's see. Oh, Chapter 5 is out on the book. Should be up on the website, the Patreon, or if you're on the mailing list. So that's out. Chapter 6 coming very soon. And all that's happened. Hell and High Water was delayed a little bit this week, but it is up on the website and published now. I'm not putting it on the live radio stream because it was a little crazy, the stuff we got into, and I'd rather that you guys subscribe to either Maria's site or mine to get it. If you're a Patreon member at $5 a month, you automatically get the Hell and High Waters anyway. So I know I'm doing all kinds of promotion here, but that's where it's at. Because here's another fun fact. Remember that radio station that I was hired by and got fired after 1 week, one day?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, independently, one of their talk show hosts came to me and wanted to book me as a guest. So he booked me on his little calendar program, and I was supposed to go on there, and then station management got wind of it and told him that he had to cancel my appearance, that they did not want me on their air because of a prior relationship. And so I told him, I said, yeah, I kind of knew that was going to happen. And apparently they blacklisted me with other Australian media outlets.
Seriously?
Yeah, and here's another fun fact. The new program director over there contacted me because she has an idea about getting, you know, experts, talking head type experts to drop in on shows for 10-minute segments, right? So, you know, we want analysis on this one particular topic. Come on for 10 minutes. She wanted to add me to that rotation as somebody who was, you know, good with international political concerns, intelligence issues, and conspiracies related to assassinations, political assassinations. Kind of a reasonable thing for somebody to use me as a talking head for, right?
Yeah, but what was the prior relationship that would keep them from having you on?
That
your relationship with the radio station?
Well, I was literally an employee of theirs for 1 week and one day, and they fired me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was the previous relationship that they didn't even explain to this guy. They just told him, you know, due to a prior relationship, you're going to have to cancel his appearance. But anyway, they were supposed to have me on as one of their, you know, like we call him in as a recurring, you know, expert. Yeah. And I wrote back to her and I said, I do believe that you will find that your management has blacklisted me, but I will be more than happy to appear if... you know, because I don't have hard feelings. They do. So, Yeah, TNT Radio has done that, and also, according to what I've been told by a confidentially placed source, at another Australian outlet, okay, alt media outlet, TNT Radio made it very clear to them that if they wanted to continue to have a relationship with this particular outlet, the TNT, you know, has a relationship with them of some kind, if they wanted to do that, they would have to avoid having certain people participate in their broadcasts, and my name is on a short list of people that cannot be brought on air on their broadcast network. So, and that, by the way, is a, you know, I guess they call themselves a, I'm not going to say who it is, but they call themselves a television outlet, and I'm not sure if they only exist online or if they actually have broadcast television in Australia. I'm not sure. But apparently, you know, it would have been like video drop-ins that, that they would have had me do over there, like, and be interviewed as a, you know, person of interest on their network, completely unrelated, not owned by the same people. But if you want to have a relationship with us, here's your list of people you can't have on your air. So, and I'm on it. So I'm blacklisted over the fact that I don't buy the whole denazification of Ukraine. And I don't,
that's amazing.
And I won't support Russia. So therefore, I'm a bad guy, and I am clearly part of the problem on planet Earth.
That really surprises me that they would go to that extreme.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, but here we are.
So I mean, what's the worst you can say? Hey, you know, it was an ideological difference. I supported one thing; they supported something else. I mean, what are they so worried about that type of publicity?
And they chose to terminate me, which is fully their right to do. They can hire and fire who they like. I'm not mad. I mean, I was a little upset by it, but it's not like I was like, and now you are my enemy. I shall strike back against you. I will blacklist anyway. I didn't do that. Okay. Matter of fact, I've had people on and invited people on this show that work for TNT even after I was fired. So, you know, remember Australian Ben? He was somehow involved over there. They fired Carl, I forget his, Leibold. Carl Leibold, shortly after they fired me, but I had him on, I had him on my network right after I was fired. Cause I didn't have any hard feelings with Carl cause he's working for TNT or any hard feelings with them. They made a choice to not have me on their air. That's their prerogative. I can do the same damn thing. How about that? But I don't. I'm Jack Blood noted yesterday that I'm pissed off at him every show, and he's correct. But, I am. I'm irritated with Jack Blood's points of view on various things at this point in time. I'm not shutting him down. I was irritated with Don Jeffries for a long time about his points of view on a bunch of things. I did not shut him down. Okay? I did not remove him because of a difference in points of view either, by the way, Don Jeffries. I removed him because it wasn't productive for either one of us. Just for the record. I like Don. I would still have Don as a guest or be a guest on his show. It's just that he's better placed with Tony Arterburn's network. So, good for him. I wish him well. Not a problem. You see? These people want to blacklist me.
Well, I mean,
me.
You and I having a difference of opinion has never been an issue. I mean, no.
But, well, it has. It has. You and I have gotten angry at each other and stuff. And you know what? We get over it. And we move on. Right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it hasn't done anything, I think, to hurt the quality of the show. Yeah, we're going to disagree, and sometimes we're really going to disagree, but it's, you know, not that often.
See, but I like the dynamic. This is, you know, as I said a long time ago, this is like my version of Hannity and Combs, where I'm very much outside of your box sometimes, and other times we can have common sense discussions, except neither one of us is really Sean Hannity or Combs, but I have you here specifically for that tension. And in fact, you surprise me when there isn't some tension sometimes. That's what's going on. But I'm happy with our disagreements because it allows other discussions to ensue. Now, I don't want to do that every show. I don't want every show to be like that. But the Friday night show, I'm happy with it this way. You know, I've never turned around and been like, BP, if you don't agree with me, I'm going to stop having you as a co-host.
Well, no, you know, we've had some, well, I mean, that was the one of the things that, you know, when I started coming on this show, I think a lot of people were surprised thinking that they could peg me as being a type of individual. And then later on when they find out a few things, it kind of surprised them.
Yeah, well, happened to me too. But that's the great thing
about it. And the thing is, you and I, the things that we do have disagreements on, we disagree, you know, across a pretty wide spectrum. But yet it's never, I don't think it's ever led to a lack of quality in the show. I mean, because we've been able, there's not a subject yet we've come across that we haven't been able to discuss. Now, right. Some things we've put off for later discussions, but I mean, other than that.
Well, and sometimes things get heated, but, you know, it is what it
well,
is.
Well, yeah, they're going to.
Yeah.
You know, so, look, people are passionate about their position.
Right. It looks like Jimmy James hung up and came back, so he's back on the line, and we also have another caller, so I want to get to them.
All right. Welcome back, Jimmy.
So let's get Jimmy James back on, because I was trying to give him an opportunity to throw something on the table, anything he wants. So, Jimmy James, you got a topic in mind now?
Well, which would you prefer, a campaign reform idea or a so-called grid idea?
What do you mean about the electrical grid?
Yep.
Oh, I don't know. BP, what would you rather hear about, an electrical grid idea or a campaign reform idea?
Well, I'll be honest with you. We can discuss both. We can cover the campaign reform, and then we'll go to the grid. How about that?
Well, all right. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take campaign reform first, and then we'll go to the other caller, and we'll come back to Jimmy James on the grid. How's that?
That'll work.
All right. Jimmy James, your campaign reform idea, we'd like to hear about that first.
Okay. Idea number one. Someone who has no chance in Hades of winning that office should be allowed to run for that office and be making a living by running for offices which they never win. Abrams.
Huh. Well, you know, I've never known of somebody to just make a living like that. However, Lyndon LaRouche was a continuous presidential loser, right? And he created a whole organization, where that was pretty much his.
See, the thing is it lets them start these so-called PACs, and then people shovel money into these so-called PACs and foundations.
Mm-hmm.
Like this Black Lives Matter so-called woman. Who's whatever, I guess they got her locked up for stealing $10 million. So, uh-huh. If you gave money to them, what can I say? You're a sucker. You helped buy one of her three mansions.
Well, people still donate money to Alex Jones. Let's put that aside, though, because we were staying on campaigns, and I don't think the Black Lives Matter lady was running for office, was she?
No, I think she's just plain running.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, fair enough. But let's stick to this other thing, though, about perpetually running as a loser and then making money. Yeah, with the PACs or whatever, there's a certain amount of that money that can be gathered for you under a PAC that you can just keep.
What they do is they start, their campaign chooses their own salary. So let's say.
Right.
I don't, it's crazy. They're given $50 million for these silly little races. And then, you know, you could say, well, I think I deserve the $2 million.
Well, right. You can decide on your own compensation and then turn around and do stuff like maybe hire your spouse or your kids, right? And give them job titles and deem that they have a certain salary level. And everybody walks away with a good chunk of change. You know, as part of their payment for running the campaign, allegedly, right? So that's one of the ways, but also legally at this point in time, you're just sort of allowed to keep some of what's left over from some of these campaign funds. I mean, I'm oversimplifying the specifics here, but I mean, that's what it boils down to. And there are people, I imagine, although I haven't specifically studied exactly how people's finances have worked out this way, but it appears to me as though... There are people that have made a living just by being a perennial loser who comes around and loses a bunch of elections And then they start another organization and, you know, give speeches and, give themselves a salary and all that too as a, you know, some sort of political consultant or whatever it is they call themselves. And, yeah, they do that. Like, so
look at Jesse Jackson, how good it worked out for him for 50 years.
Well, there you go. I'm sorry, but what was that about Jesse Jackson? Did you say something about sex trafficking?
Well, probably, but I just said his name and the way he talks.
Oh, I don't know. I'm saying I'm open to God knows what kind of corruption could be happening there. You know, I still one of my favorite stories ever is telling you about Tootie coming to my school when I was in high school, but she was there to campaign for Jesse Jackson. Anyway, back to this whole thing, though. So what is your reform idea to put a stop to that? I mean, obviously, but, I mean, there's a lot of...
They're allowed to run, and the IRS shouldn't allow them to start these not so-called non-profit campaign slush funds. It's ridiculous. We got to clean up and end politics. Either America puts an end to these political parties or they're going to put an end to us.
Look, I hear you, but, you know, take a look at the some of the PACs that, say, Mitch McConnell has control of. He's able to funnel money into places like Georgia, right? I mean, tens of millions of dollars into political races here, right, from his slush fund. I mean, I'm sure he gets a healthy chunk of change for administering that, right? And then he's got the wife doing her thing as well. I mean, the two of them together, they very quietly do a lot of moving of money around too, right?
Sure. Don't forget about his brother-in-law.
His brother? I'm. It's not coming right to the top of my mind. Who are we talking about?
Well, of course. He's married to a Chinese lady, and his brother-in-law was busted with the largest amount of cocaine in the history of the world. That's how he earned his name, Cocaine Mitch O'Connell.
Wow. Well, I was more focused on the whole Moscow Mitch thing that they did with him for a while, and they seem to have dropped that. But, yeah, well, there's you know, coke.
Yeah, and that he runs. That Senate campaign slush fund that's supposed to get Republican senators elected, See, that's how he keeps in as leader. He'll only spend that money on rhinos. They'll support him. So there's a problem there. I don't know. We just need to get, and that Supreme Court was crazy. The new Supreme Court needs to look at that decision that lets businesses and corporations donate and all this junk.
Citizens United.
Major overhaul.
You mean the Citizens United decision? Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I agree with you, and that cuts both ways. I mean, I'm also watching the DNC dump money into, you know, again, just from where I'm sitting, it's easy to see, dumping a whole lot of money into the loser campaign of Abrams. I mean, where is all that going? Again, especially with the excessive amount that's come in. And I don't think they're showing, you know, in 2020, there was a lot of campaign commercials. I can imagine them spending millions of dollars. This year, there was some, and then they pulled back. And there hasn't been a lot of Abrams commercials running, like, ad nauseum everywhere, like I saw before. So, you know, now I don't know where the 50, 80, whatever it is, million dollars that the DNC dumped into Abrams' pack. I don't know where that money went. I think that ought to be an interesting audit if anybody bothers to do it, but I doubt they will. Because you peel back that scab, you get to that pus, and you know what? There might be another whole pocket of infection right next to it that might have, GOP fingerprints on it. And they don't want any part of revealing that here in Georgia. So that's where we're going.
And I kind of see Beto Bat Zero Rourke as kind of a character like her, where he just keeps running for offices in Texas,
mm-hmm.
where he's got zero chance of winning.
That was the fascinating thing about the early George H.W. Bush political career, too, is that, you know, he kept running and losing in Texas, right? And it was interesting, you know, it's like he couldn't really win elections on his own, George H.W. Bush, which I always found remarkable because people go, oh, he's been in the CIA since the 50s. I don't think so. Because, you know, at some point the CIA could have figured out how to steal an election for him. He was losing to, like, nobody in Texas. of course, the money back then is not...
Old Man Bush?
Yeah. Yeah, Old Man Bush.
Yeah, Old Man Bush, back then, the Democrats just ran that state too tight. No Republican could have been gotten elected in Texas back then.
But yeah, but other Republicans did. It was a little more of a purple state. He couldn't do it in, like, you know, House races and stuff. He couldn't even come close. He was getting beaten badly. You know, in his...
He did one. I think he won one. I'll give him that.
Oh,
one,
yeah.
One race.
Yeah, he got one. He got one out of, like, four that he attempted to go for, right? And then he tried to get on the national stage and couldn't carry his own presidential campaign.
Well, look at Biden.
Yeah,
you know, Biden
same
ran,
thing.
What, three times? Got laughed out of the primaries two times over plagiarism charges and the like. And, you know, hey, third time's a charm.
Yeah. Oh, perfect example. A guy who waited around long enough and, you know, again, had his vice presidential time where he sat back, you know, against a more charismatic vice president. Yeah, same thing.
It's bad when you have to sit around and wait to be the best of the worst.
Well, but that's it. But that's what Bush did by running with Reagan twice, right? Because Reagan was the product you could sell. Bush was the styrofoam peanuts that came in the box. He just kind of came with it, so who cares? And that's pretty much what Biden was. Yeah, same kind of thing. Except, you know, two different sides of the aisle, but same deal. You know, not worthy of being elected on his own.
The Bush and the CIA thing, I don't know. Maybe he was in the CIA. I don't think he was involved with the assassination, blah, blah, blah. But
no, me neither.
He did do some really weird things that day, like call the FBI, make a alibi, and even snitched on one of his own friends saying, oh, he really hates Kennedy and all that weird
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean,
what was up with that?
Yeah, no, all that's true. And the thing is, he was definitely positioned to interact with some real players in the CIA when it came to Cuba and all that. All of that is true, but I don't think he was a, you know, I don't think he was a kingpin for a while there. And they're like, oh, they made him head of the CIA. Yeah, Gerald Ford did for a year. You know, that's, you know, that definitely means you had some inside juice, but, you know.
Well, there's nothing to say that, you know, Bush couldn't have been involved in the CIA when he was in office doing all that, you know, calling in to provide an alibi and narking on his neighbor just as a way of muddying things up. Maybe that was his job.
Yeah. No, but that's the thing is as a business asset, as an asset, I believe it, but the people that want to make it seem like he was running the show.
I don't know about running. Was he really intelligent enough to run the CIA?
Well, I'm not sure about that.
I think he was kind of like a case officer, if I was to guess, working out of Houston, apparently.
See, I don't even think
and
he was...
probably was running some...
Yeah. No, I disagree there. I don't think I don't think he was the kind of guy that could be a case officer. I think he's exactly the kind of guy who was a business asset, who was useful because he was in the oil business, and, you know, interacting with international concerns that were sensitive at the time. You know, very much like dealing with the oil just outside of Cuba and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and the societal contacts as well. I mean, you know, is what, his dad was ambassador to Great Britain or somewhere?
Well, Prescott Bush, I mean, you know, again.
His dad was a senator.
Yeah, but also, he was a center, but he was involved in a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, he was, you know, you have the whole Bank of New York thing where he gets taken in on the Trading with the Enemies Act and all that. One count against him, by the by. But, yeah, I mean.
Well, if you think about it, like someone like Ben Bradley, you know, their connections to society as well as being, you know, connected to the new major newspaper in D.C.
Right.
You know, but his societal contacts as well. You know, perfect asset.
Yeah, exactly, but that's the thing. He's useful, but he's not, you know, he's not running stuff. That's all I'm getting.
Yeah, he's not running. Yeah, he ain't in charge of the circus.
Right. I mean, again, Ford puts him in charge for 1 year, but.
What do you think of that supposed document that pretty much says George Bush of the CIA talked to Herbert Hoover or. Director Hoover today, what about that memo? You think that thing's legit or what?
Yeah, I think the memo's legit, but here's the thing about memos is sometimes there are things committed to them that are not, you know, gospel fact. They're just the observation of the author, and the author is not always as well informed as they think they are. And that includes J. Edgar Hoover sometimes, who makes statements that are really weird, even stuff he writes down that don't really make sense on occasion.
He's being told. I mean, he pretty much can only know what he's being told. I mean,
well, that's the thing.
Pretty much was hanging out.
Well, but that's the thing, is if Bush is, you know, in with a bunch of CIA people, Hoover could just assume that he's part of the CIA because he's working with, you know, Cubans that are clearly being touched by the CIA that Hoover knows about, which, you know, is, that makes perfect sense. That guy's with the CIA.
But why would J. Edgar Hoover allow him to be part of a debriefing on the assassination? It makes no sense to me.
Well, again, because if there were suspects that were connected to, you know, remember the official position being Oswald. Oswald had interactions with Cubans.
Okay.
Right?
So let's say that George Bush was looking at hard right guys, and that's why he called in on his buddy there, James Perot.
Yeah, well, Perot.
Somehow I just remembered his name.
Right, and when we dig into Perot, we find out that he was probably just a guy who was a little mentally unstable, and you know was easy fodder for Bush to throw something in there as to why he did. I mean, look, we can speculate all day, but I mean, it's just it is a very look. There's a lot of weird stuff he does, but to know what the motive is, I mean, it could be that somebody just directed him, hey, listen, if you do this, this is helpful for whatever reason. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, that it makes sense or anything else, and he's just doing what he's told, which is probably what he would do most of the time as an asset. You know, listen, man, we'll help you out with business stuff. You just got to do this or that or talk to these guys or, you know, have a meeting with these people, even though it doesn't really help your business. Pretend like it's gonna so you can learn something and report back to us. You know, in which case, oh, that's my duty to do so, you know, as a former military guy and all that. I mean, because remember, he was actually, you know, somebody who served in the military and all that. You know, he could have just looked at it as his good patriotic duty to inform on potentially dangerous individuals, right? I mean, I'm going for the most antiseptic viewpoint on this, even, but still.
I don't know. It seems weird to me.
Definitely is. So, BP, let's get to another caller because we've had this other one waiting on the line. So, Jimmy James, hang on. And I do believe we have Mr. Graves on the line with us. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, Chris, you may have, just so you know, before you get into what it is you want to throw on the table here tonight, you may have a show joining you on Sunday very soon. So I was planning on maybe moving you out of the Sunday slot, and instead there may be a show joining you on Sunday. So we'll get into that soon.
Say that one more time. I might be... Am I moving out of the survey slot, or someone's joining me? Because I'm getting two different things here.
Yeah, somebody will be joining you on Sunday, and it wasn't the one I had planned to begin with. Somebody else. So. Yeah, but
okay,
might be interesting, though. It might be very interesting, although you're going to start to have to hit your 9 o'clock deadline, I think, maybe. We'll see how
that
goes.
I'm pretty good about that. I'll pat myself on the back. I'm pretty good. Maybe.
Yeah.
Sorry to be people.
Well, no, I was going to say maybe we should expand Sunday and, you know, start a third program, and Chuck and I could have our grand theological debate every Sunday morning.
Oh, Sunday morning theological debate. That could be something. That could be something.
The 700 Club.
You know, just make Sunday a full day at the Ocelli compound.
Yeah, maybe, but now maybe. He doesn't have the main pastor anymore to be able to do that, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, you know, inside jokes now. I'm sure.
Is it really
that
inside?
I don't know. I'm very sure I can get somebody else to represent the intensely dedicated to Jesus line of thought on Sundays.
Well,
if
we
I
can
want.
Make it a call-in show.
Yeah, of course. You know, here's a little known fact. One of my favorite radio shows when I lived in New York was actually a Sunday call-in show that they described as an ecumenical roundtable. Where they actually had a Muslim cleric, a rabbi, and a priest all come on the show and discuss spiritual issues with callers. I found it really interesting.
Sounds very, very exciting.
Well, I found it really interesting. I know, you know, it's like one of those things people yawn and turn off, but to me, I found it really super interesting. You know, some people would call in and only want to talk to the rabbi, say. And some people would call in and be like, I want to hear from all three of you. You know, it was cool stuff.
I think that'd make a great podcast if someone did it.
But that's what I'm thinking. You know, an ecumenical roundtable where you have people that are definitely from different points of view religiously. Get together.
Well, you got to get the Satanists, the atheists, the agnostics. You got to get everybody in there. Scientologists.
No. No, I don't.
Protestant and a Catholic.
Well, I don't want to hear just the main. I always don't want to hear the main big players. I want to hear everybody.
Yeah, but that's the thing is
get a Pastafarian in there.
See, if I participate, right? You've already got the freaky end of the stick. I can just get mainstream guys to sit down with me because, you know, although people have objected, I've tried to explain that I actually minister to people, but I minister based on their faith, not my own. And a lot of people don't understand that. So that makes me weird enough that, that I could handle, right. You know, you want to hear the pagan perspective, I'm the guy. So good enough, and I could maybe occasionally bring in an extra witch or something, you know, on occasion guest stars, but we could you know,
Lori Cabot out of Salem.
Yeah, you never know. There's a bunch of people in Salem that would be interesting that can speak intelligently about that.
Yep.
And this Courtney Love, daughter of Satan. Hello, Courtney.
Oh God, no.
Well, I used to have Sabrina Mergenthaler on the show, who called herself Sabrina Black, who starred in no, seriously, she was on that reality show Naked and Afraid for a little while.
Oh, well.
And she is also a publicly declared Wiccan type witch.
I got a question. Mm-hmm. What is the point of having a show called Naked and Afraid? And you put a pixelated rectangle over anything that would be shown if you were naked. So you're not really naked. So I've never understood that show.
Well, it's to get you to subscribe to the service where you can stream it where there's no blurs, you know.
Oh, they have a feed with no blurs?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that's the one you got to pay for.
All right. That makes sense.
That's the one you got to pay for. So
you got to pay for it?
Well, like in real life, you got to pay for it anyway, right? You know what I'm saying?
Well, there you go. I mean, you know.
I don't know. There's a lot of free places out there to see a lot of nakedity.
Well, even if you're going on a date and buying them dinner and a movie, that's still paying for it.
Hey, you're not going to get an argument out of me. I did a whole thing, which
get into marriage,
you know, which totally has eternally crippled my female audience. You know that, right?
Oh yeah, that's right.
When I did my 97% of all women are prostitutes show, my female audience disappeared and never came back.
Well, you got that castration letter. That was kind of tastefully done, you know?
Well, that's what got me that letter.
Here's a good thing, and Chris, you might find this helpful as a young man dating. All women are bi. It's your job to figure out, are they bisexual or bipolar?
Oh, yeah, I've had them where they would want to bring their girl in, too. And I love it when they're bi.
Both of my wives went both ways, Visa and MasterCard. That led to a lot of issues.
Yeah. You know, Jimmy James is acting like, you know, bipolar doesn't necessarily come with bisexual. What do you mean, either or? They're quite often both. You know. So now I'm gonna find out if I have any female audience outside of Miss Patricia, because I'm gonna get hate mail. But anyway,
well, there's another show we could do.
Well, Chris, before we get too far away, what's your opinion on George Bush and the CIA?
Oh, what, Chris? You want Chris's opinion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I figured that discussions like these, like what I really think about it, it's not really going to make one iota of a difference. But I think it's possible he could have been in Dealey Plaza. But that picture that everyone refers to, I mean, I've seen the same guy from different angles now, and it doesn't really look like George Bush. Like it does in that one picture, kind of. But and the thing with J. Edgar Hoover's memo. Didn't they try to do something where they said it was a different George Bush later on or something like that? They pull that stuff.
They claimed it was a janitor, that which was a load of crap. Everyone said, okay, then why would J. Edgar Hoover debrief a janitor on the Kennedy assassination? Get real.
Oh, it wasn't a janitor. The guy.
There's also a picture that they say is W too, waiting for his father.
Yeah, of course.
Who they said that he was arrested out of the Daltex building because he was a spotter or something.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
I don't know. I wasn't there, but I have no idea. I mean, it's possible. People poo-poo the idea of him being in the CIA before he actually was. But you think about it, Prescott Bush was like involved in a lot of shady stuff, like with like even with the Nazis and stuff. Like that family and with Skull and Bones and everything, they had a lot of influence, like in politics in general.
Right.
So whether or not he was in Dealey Plaza, I mean, he's the only guy that doesn't remember where he was on November 22nd. I don't know. It was interesting, but maybe it was just put out there as a distraction. Too.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I'm up for anything.
Yeah. Just to be clear about one thing though, the George Bush that they said you're confusing him with, you know, when they put out that statement, wasn't a janitor. He was hired temporary hire by the CIA. The guy only worked there for like 6 months, and they let him go.
It was like a Kelly girl, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and that does by the way, that does happen. You know, you get hired by the CIA, they test you out a little bit, and then they kick you. And this other George Bush apparently was one of those guys. So he's not going to be involved in any sensitive debriefing. He was like, you know, handling bulk files or something for 6 months, and then they got rid of them.
But I'll say this though, it is interesting in the memo that it says that a George Bush out of Houston, oil man or whatever, it does say that he called in a tip saying that he knew who who killed the president, and I think he named a guy by the name of James Byrd or something that. Curiously, later on, would be working on his campaign in like '87, like right before he became president.
Well, it was
kind of an odd statement.
It was Perot. So. It was Perot, or some people say Parrot, the guy that he identified who was
Parrot. Yes, that's the one. Thank you. Parrot,
who was already working on his campaign, and he didn't say that he was the guy who really did it. What he said was that this guy was making statements that were hostile to the president, like threatening statements about JFK.
That's correct. Yeah, I stand corrected.
Yeah, is what he was saying. I'm not trying to one up you. I just want to make things clear.
I'm glad you said that because I said first I said James Byrd and it's actually Parrot. I remember just vaguely reading that he had a tip.
Yeah, he calls in a tip.
Let me get in one thing.
Yeah, sure,
Parrot
Jimmy.
Thing that's interesting. That Parrot guy was a member of the Young Republicans Club, along with guess who? Your old pal there. Who's your old buddy there? Somebody called blah blah.
Thomas Arthur Valley.
What? What, Oglesby?
No. The guy that was a trickster for Nixon.
Okay.
Oh, Howard Hunt?
No. Roger Stone.
Oh, that's not my buddy. Oh, you mean John Jeffries with the book and everything?
Yeah, well, that guy, they were in the same organization, which back then wasn't all that big, the Young Republicans. That's just a little weird.
Well, I'll say this.
This is the last thing I'll say about what you just asked me about, what I thought about him and JFK and everything.
Yeah.
It's very weird that, you know, all of a sudden he becomes the head of the CIA in 1976, yet he says he wasn't affiliated with them at all in 63. I mean, that's only, what? Basically a decade prior. I mean, he had to have some kind of contact, especially with his father being Prescott. It's a possibility. I don't know. I don't think he actually was in that picture, though, in Dealey Plaza that everyone likes to use as proof.
You missed our little part. None of us think that he was in Dealey Plaza, but I brought up the possibility that I do think that he was probably some type of officer, CIA officer.
I think he was. That's what I mean by the last thing I said. I think he was fully entrenched in the CIA by that point.
Yeah,
but I don't think he was just a business asset. I think he was full blown within the CIA because they wouldn't just give him that position in 1976 out of nowhere like a civilian.
Well, but see, that's the thing is I don't think he was a guy who was in charge of anything. That's the thing, and maybe he was more than a business asset because he was well connected. But Chuck,
just answer me this. Remember with his oil ships, with his company, he had Zapata, and he named one Barbara. It was Zapata was like the whole Bay of Pigs thing.
Like yeah, but Zapata. Okay. Whoa. Before we get into that, hang on, Jimmy James. Wait. Just
I always thought that was weird. You know what I mean?
But it's not that weird. Zapata is a mark. It is an isthmus on a map. Okay, first of all, and it's a fairly common.
But his company was Zapata Oil.
Yeah, right. Because of where it was located, Zapata is. If you look up the origin of where that name comes from, it's to honor a military general or something like this. And the thing is that there are a lot of landmarks named Zapata. Indeed, one of the landmarks very near to where the Bay of Pigs is called Zapata. It's like an isthmus off of the island of Cuba. Okay, so.
Okay, I guess you. I'm just saying that between that and George de Morningshield, I think he really was more entrenched than what people think.
Listen,
that's just my opinion.
I'm certain that you're right.
I'm not arguing with you, Chuck. I'm just saying that's what I think. I don't know. I'm not saying he was one of the spotters, like people like to say, but I think he had a lot to do with that event.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to. Look, that's the problem. I don't think he had anything to do with that event. I don't think that he was the kind of guy that was useful for that. Because he just wasn't.
Well, with the Morningshield thing, that's pretty weird too. With Lee Harvey and him, and then he's buddies with. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that we have a lot of ability to speculate about this because all of it is not entirely known.
I'm grasping at straws. That's why I usually don't talk about stuff like this anymore.
Yes. Well, no. I'm just trying to be clear about stuff here that.
I know. I'm not saying you're wrong. You're probably right.
No, but it's not about wrong or right. I'm just trying to say that what we have in hand does not reveal that he was directly involved in that circumstance. Okay, that's.
I was just pointing out things that I came across over the years that were, I was connecting dots where there might not be a connection at all.
But that's the other thing is that, you know, look, Barbara has no middle name, and that ship was called Barbara J, and he's not the one naming the ship, by the way. So there's
one. I thought he named all those ships because it was his company, no?
Yeah, see, that's one of those things that has floated around to support it. But that's not entirely true.
I can't hear you at all. There's like a wave of water or something.
No, it's what that is Jimmy James's feedback. The thing is that the Barbara J had that name before he acquired it. And that's something that you can see in registration records.
I did not know that. Then that throws out the whole thing.
but here's the thing is also Barbara J doesn't make sense for Barbara. Because she doesn't, I don't think she had a middle name. Or if she did, it's not with a J. One or the other, it doesn't match up. The J doesn't make sense. And then some people
her maiden name was like Crowley, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't Crowley. Here we go with another thing. She's Aleister Crowley's daughter.
Gosh, kidding.
No, but I'm just, but this is how these things go into these weird directions is because, you know, again, and this is one of those things that, what do you call it? Prouty used to say, right? So, you know, and again, Prouty had some interesting insights and information, but the people that think
what's your take on what was your take on the Christchurch paper? What, do you think that was a lot to do about nothing? Because I tried to study that. But I don't know what to make of it, like with the time zone difference and the whole cover story all at once. I never asked you about that.
There's a variety of things that are possible there. I don't argue for or against that because I have never nailed it down significantly enough for me to make a claim that I'm sure it's
hard
one way or the other.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it is hard to follow, and it's very difficult considering the amount of time that would be necessary and how wire services and stuff worked at that time. It seems to me as though there was distribution of information, not just to Australia, mind you, but, you know, to all sorts of parts of the world that happened very quickly, faster than it ever happened.
Didn't
in history.
Also part of that cover story have something to do with J.D. Tippit being shot by Oswald at the theater, like when they're trying to arrest him? Wasn't that a part of the same cover story, I think?
Well, okay. The problem there is that there was initial reports from Dallas that, you know, a Secret Service agent and possibly a police officer been killed. You know, and that's the thing.
Cronkite said that, right?
Well,
he was like the first and only one?
No, he's not the only one.
Trademark people said it too.
Yeah, but he's not the only one because I know it was reported on ABC News, which hardly anybody ever paid attention to. The ABC feed also had it that a Secret Service agent was killed. It might have been NBC as well. I think in the initial, the part of it before they, you know, realized they weren't videotaping the news. And they initially had audio. No, that's a real thing, by the way. They didn't always have a tape rolling on news. So the first, I don't know, 20 minutes or so of the live coverage from NBC Studios in New York is not on videotape.
As you said, NBC Bulletin, like on the screen, that type of thing?
That's what you see today. It was going out as a live broadcast, but the thing is, the only people that recorded it were radio stations that were carrying the audio feed. So the TV station, which would have had to literally put a spool of videotape on their machine, didn't for like 20 minutes or a half hour or something. And then you see it joined, and then there's that famous footage where they're trying to stick a black box on a telephone to, you know, get a broadcast. And believe me, they were having trouble with feedback with that thing. And all that stuff. And that's Chet Huntley and all those guys at NBC, which, you know, were all called together in New York. But I think they reported the Secret Service agent being killed as well. But there was a lot of confusing stuff.
I thought Prouty, based on Len Osanek, his website, I thought Prouty actually, in the article, it actually named Tippit. and it was kind of like that's where Tippett was originally supposed to be killed. But I know your take on it was that you thought Tippett was a separate thing altogether. It was like a lover's quarrel, right, where he just happened to be around the same time he got killed because someone was cheating on someone. And
That's a possibility. Yeah, I because there was a lot of weird stuff, and clearly based on stuff that other Dallas police told me, you know, he was a little.
You never talked to me about this, by the way, so I don't even know how I know it.
I'm not sure either, but you do know it from somewhere.
Oh, it just popped into my head that you, I think you had a theory that you never really told anybody that.
His
murder was separate.
Yeah,
altogether.
But what happened is, this is back in the days when I used to share stuff with other authors. And I don't remember which one of them did it, but one of them put it in their book, you know, basically claimed my words, by the way, and put it in their book and acted like it was theirs. And I don't remember which one it was, to be honest with you. It was circa 97 or 8. And somebody put it in their book. Well, let me think.
Hell, I would know that.
Yeah, let me think about the anniversary. You know what? It might have been 98 because I think it was at the 35th year from the assassination. So I'm pretty sure it was 98 that they published. And somebody published.
Do you still feel like that's what the most likely thing was for Tippett?
No, I'm not convinced that that's likely. I'm just convinced that it's possible, and I've never been able to follow up on it enough. But based on some of the interviews, which I took down handwritten notes on and gave to somebody, I gave them, I'll tell you, I gave them to Harrison Livingstone is who I gave them to.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and I don't think he's the author who, stole it. He showed it to somebody else because back then he was still talking to some people and, they ran with it in their book. You know, and I know that, I've gone over it with Walt Brown before, privately, Walt does not disagree with me. He says that, you know, that there is a factor to some of what went on with, I'm explaining some of what went on with Tippett that day. Not necessarily that's why he was killed necessarily, but the idea that, you know, remember this, in Texas, if you were a spurned husband who, like, say, caught your wife cheating and you shot and killed the man that was banging your wife, there was a legal technicality by which, you could be convicted and then serve no time. They had a certain, I forget what the phrase was exactly, but there was something like, you know, in a heat of passion that sort of justified. You could get away with murder based on that, where it's like you have a murder conviction, but you don't actually serve time.
I like your what if they had purposely sent Oswald into a theater where they had Tippett's wife in there, and they were telling Tippett all kinds of stuff that Oswald did this, that, and the other thing. Maybe they were trying to get him to do the killing.
Look, Tippett was at a position at a weird time. Nobody accounts for why he was at a position, even among the other cops. There's a lot of open possibilities there. But just really fast.
And according to Roger Craig's story, Oswald got in that Rambler station wagon with the Cuban fella, right? So he had nothing to do with Oswald.
Yeah, but all right, but Craig is a whole other discussion. Just hang on one quick second about this. The thing about Tippett that I want to get across here is that there's a lot of stuff there that I don't think anybody ever fully uncovered because it doesn't lead to, it could very well lead to some other stuff going on. Like, why was he out of position? Why was he at the record store, with the phone calls?
Yeah, making a phone call in the store, right?
You know, yeah. And the thing is that he was a bit of a tomcat. He was sleeping around. And that, you know, and just really fast, though, the whole thing about that Texas law where you can get off on killing, you know, somebody who's banging your wife and all that. You know,
heat of passion. Yeah.
You know who explained that to me? Who told me that at the time that was like a real thing? Like, and you know, the Henry Wade.
Henry Wade?
Henry Wade told me about that.
Wait, Roe versus Wade, Henry Wade?
Yeah. Well, he was retired. But look, when I went down there in 93, excuse me. When I went down there in 93, okay.
Yeah, he'd still be alive. Okay. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, he was still alive. I actually got one of the cops to tell me where his house was, and I went and visited him, and he had a little office in his house. And I sat down with him and talked to him about it. And you know, look, I couldn't get in too many questions. He just wanted to tell me stories. Oh, you're interested in that case. And his big thing was, hey, you know what? When I was sitting there and I was talking at the press conference, he wanted me to know about how Jack Ruby piped up to correct him about the fair play for Cuba versus the Free Cuba Committee. Because that's what Wade initially said in front of the microphones is, well, he was with the Free Cuba Committee. And, you know, and I knew from the audio already that more than one voice had piped up. And I said, well, there was more than one voice. And he said, yeah, but I know now that that was Jack Ruby who said, no, fair play for Cuba Committee. And he just, you know, was telling me this like as if it was a big surprise. And maybe to a lot of people back then it might have been. But I was like, yeah, I know he's one of the voices, but I hear another voice along with him saying it. Do you know who that was? And Wade did not know who else piped up with Ruby. Okay, I'm just telling you, this is what went on. And then he started explaining to me about, you know, how he had this great conviction rate.
He's funny, who was George de Mornfield.
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't think there's any. I don't think the Morn Shield was present at the midnight press conference.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
But what I'm saying is that there's a lot of weird people that were present at, you know, while the press was milling around in the Dallas Safety Building too. So, you know, again, there's Jack Ruby's there from Friday night. He's on camera. You can see him.
Didn't Jack Ruby have the pickup truck? Wasn't Jack Ruby's pickup truck the one on the curb?
That's
the woman said she saw.
That's the claim from that one woman, and I don't know anybody else has verified it, okay? That used to be one of Garrison's go-to claims. But you see what happens is you mention one thing, and the next thing you know, we're talking about Julianne Mercer, and was he there in the air conditioning truck? And you know what I'm saying? It's like, look at how we went from, was George
the
Bush...
The water gets muddied. The waters get muddied, yeah.
Yeah, because but that's the thing is you got to slow down and take these things one thing at a time, and this is why everybody hates me on this, because I go look. Stick.
I don't hate you for it. You're explaining it.
No, no, not you. I'm saying, dude. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
All right. People do this to me all the time, where they're like, "I can't stand you. You shut everything down." I'm like, "I'm not shutting it down. I'm just trying to say let's clarify one thing before we move on to the next."
So
you know,
why do you be shutting stuff down?
It's good.
Yeah, I'm terrible. I'm a gatekeeper, you know. They used to call me a gatekeeper.
No, Father. No, it's not my point of view.
No, I say, let's break the whole
You're
thing down.
You're a gatekeeper. You'd be agreeing with all this shit and stuff with, Bush being in the Dowtex building. You'd be agreeing with it if you were a gatekeeper.
Well, why not? I mean, and look, you wind up tracking down people like Eugene Braden and all that. And, you know, you could go in so many different, because that's who they're confusing with. Oh, and John Hankey was the one who really pushed that. And I think the guy Russ Baker probably ran with it, too, that, you know, that he was arrested.
Russ Baker had the whole Bush in the Dowtex thing. That was his baby, I think.
Well, I distinctly remember John Hankey pushing it on podcasts and radio before I saw Russ Baker do it.
Yeah, he did too. Yeah, I'm happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's the thing about that is back when, you know, when you mentioned that on your show this past Sunday and you were saying, you know, it was Dark Alliances. Yeah, that was that one. But the first one, the first thing he ever put
first
out
thing was all about Bush being in the Dowtex building.
Well, but no, he didn't put it there. Not in the first one, because the first one was called JFK 2, the Bush Connection. That was the first thing he put out.
Yeah, JFK, No. I know this. No, JFK 2 was the JFK Jr. thing. That was
no, it was not. No, it was not.
It was.
I'm telling you, go back and look. JFK 2, the Bush connection?
No, because he called it JFK 2. He called it JFK 2 because of Oliver Stone's movie being JFK. That's why he called it JFK 2.
Okay, double check your facts, because I'm telling you, JFK 2, the Bush connection, was meant to be his follow-up to the JFK movie. That was Hank. I was in contact with Hanky when he was doing this. JFK 2 is the first one. The next one is JFK Jr., and I don't remember the title of that one, but both of them were remade and refined.
Yeah, like three different titles for it.
Yeah, and both of them were remade and refined into this Dark Alliances 1 and 2, or Dark Legacy, excuse me, Legacy, Dark Legacy 1 and 2.
Legacy, that's right, yeah.
And both of those.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, but Dark Legacy 1 was on JFK Senior, and Dark Legacy 2 was on JFK Jr., but initially, JFK 2, the Bush connection, was all about how Prescott Bush was really a cutout, was really running things, and that, you know, he was even running Alan Dulles, and he was connected to Nazis, and that was Hanky's thing. And it was all about, you know, there's Bush, and Russ Baker started with the pictures, and in between, when Hanky was running around and redoing his movies into Dark Legacy 1 and 2, because he had copyright issues with JFK 2, the Bush connection. And Alex Jones made it so he was giving those away to people that made donations, the JFK 2 movies. So when that was going on and there was a copyright issue over it, Hanky had to remake it into something, and he put money into this Dark Legacy 1 and 2, which wound up running on Netflix and all that. Holy crap, I just realized we're almost out of time. Oh, man. I'm sorry. I just ended up running through this, and we did JFK stuff for, like, probably an hour. Damn. BP, I apologize,
man.
It's
only been about 20 minutes.
Okay, either way. And I'm already exhausted. This is why I'm, like, exhausted from it.
To be fair, Jimmy James brought up the things, and I was calling in to ask you guys about the how they're starting to pay top dollar now, apparently, for unvaccinated sperm donations.
Really? That's news to me.
That was my topic for the night. Thank you,
Jimmy
James. I might
have a retirement plan.
Hey, I don't wait. Did anybody on the line here get a vaccine?
I didn't.
Nope.
Nice. We might all be carrying.
They're calling it the new Bitcoin too on Vice.com was the article.
Nice. We might all be carrying our retirement plans in our ball bags. Wonderful. Okay.
That's my final thought.
There it is. And there is the final thought for the show. Again, appreciate you guys for tuning in. And coming up next on the network will be The Age of Transitions with Aaron Franz. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. Please, please make a donation to Ocelli.com soon, because, I'm broke. And, thankfully, by the way, shout out to Jimmy James, and shout out also to our friend Ray in Australia, because both of them kicked a little bit of coinage my way so that I have a little more than 33 cents now. But I need a little more. If you guys can do it, I would really appreciate it. I thank you for being part of the show. I thank my co-host, BP, Jimmy James, and Chris Graves for calling in. You for listening, because after all, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. See you next week.